Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Dr. Vicky Graham, District 1 Director, and professor at American Public University. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoy it.
You know, we appreciate you being on here. I know, Dr. Graham, we've been working on it, and I'm going to try and remember to call you Vicky, but Dr. Graham, it's just how my parents raised me. We've been working on this for a while, trying to get you on the show, and just excited we're finally here, especially having the District 1 director out, the Northeast director. That's you right. Look right in the background, a beautiful picture of the map of what you're in charge of. And we would like to start with saying thank you for being here, of course, and would love to hear a little bit about you, how you got into athletic training, and how you came up to where you're at now.
Well, I'm happy to talk about that. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here with you. I do represent the New England states, the Far East Coast, on the NATA Board of Directors, and it's been a long road to get here. I started out my career, really, I got peripherally involved a little bit, actually, even my senior year in high school, believe it or not. Grew up in Cincinnati, and my junior year, I took a chemistry class, and the chemistry teacher there was the, air quotes, athletic trainer for the football team, which is the only team that had an athletic trainer or someone in a position that acted in that capacity. And I went to a fairly large high school, and one of the electives they offered was a sports medicine class. It was sort of like an intro to athletic training, and I signed up for it as an elective my senior year because I had some space in my schedule, and that chemistry teacher saw that my name was on the list and said, hey, you're on here. Why don't you come out and help us with football in the fall? And I did that. I don't even know what made me say yes, but I'm like, oh, sure, I'll do this. But it was sort of a big deal there at the time because, you know, it was back in the day, there were no women, no girls with the football team and all of that. So it was a big, you know, women's lib takes over Princeton High School kind of moment there. And then we also had a female drum major that year. So kind of cornered the market there for a little bit of time. But I did that. And the school was really good to me because, you know, the football coach could have easily said no. And he was really supportive, and he was a very successful and influential football coach, so he could easily said no and nobody would have batted an eye, especially then, and he didn't. So that allowed me a good opportunity to kind of get involved, and they actually sent me to a workshop, not a Kramer workshop, but similar to one at Miami University in Ohio.
I remember those. Yeah,
I worked some Kramer workshops, but this one was similar to it but not a Kramer, and it was at Miami University in Ohio, and I did that. You know, I helped out that year. So, and thought, well, I did that. I liked it. And, you know, went on to college and changed my major a whole bunch of times. And then thought, you know what? I really liked what I did. And I know that there's a NATA approved curriculum at Bowling Green. So I ended up at Bowling Green State University and graduated from there. And then I thought I'd be a high school athletic trainer because that's the only thing I knew. I thought I'd have to teach and be an athletic trainer. And then partway through, I realized, you know, these people that are, you know, we call them preceptors now, the ATs and the faculty, they'd like do this for a living. And they don't have to teach at the same time. I mean, some of them teach a class, but they're not teaching English in high school. So I realized I could actually make a career of it and ended up going straight into grad school at the University of Tennessee and worked with the women's programs there and just went on my way. So I've done a lot of work in the Division I collegiate athletics. I also kind of finished my career in Division III athletics and at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. But I've worked in secondary school athletics. I've worked for physician-owned sports medicine practices. I've worked for a physician-owned concussion management clinic. Done a fair amount of even per diem work in the later years as I've just been teaching, but been in a lot of different settings. So I feel like I have an idea of the challenges in many of those settings.
Well-rounded career. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. It has been. It has been.
Now I got to ask, you worked at University of Tennessee with the female athletes. Did you do basketball?
I sure did. I sure
Oh
did.
my God, that would have been incredible to work with coaches there. Oh my
Great,
God.
great. So I had the opportunity to work with Pat Summitt,
Oh man.
and at the time I was there, Nancy Darsh was the assistant. She later went on to be the head coach at Ohio State and work in the WNBA, but. I had a good opportunity to work with those coaches and some, successful teams there. I worked with them for 2 years. The second year, I did travel with them and I was the primary person. That second year, that group won their first national championship. So
Oh, wow.
it was, Pat had just come off being the Olympic coach, and everywhere we went, it was sort of a they're going to honor Pat before the game because she'd been the Olympic coach and they won gold and all that. So. It was a fun year.
Fun experience for sure. Wow. Now, you said something that really sparked my interest because you don't hear it often. I thought I was going to work in high school and teach, and that was it. Because so many never think that anymore. They want to jump straight to the college, if not straight to the pros. So, with that in mind, what kind of transitioned you away from the high school setting, even though you thought that's where you're going to start?
See, that's the only thing I really knew, or I didn't think about it because obviously when I went to that clinic, when my high school sent me to that clinic, all the people that were the faculty there were college athletic trainers. But I sort of was a little slow. I mean, I just hadn't what didn't even consider it as a career. I just thought I'm going to do this thing my senior year and it'll be fun and whatever. And I thought at that point I just knew that I thought that was my option. And then as I said, once I was in the program at BG and realized, hey, there are other options besides being, teaching all day, being a high school athletic trainer. And it really was so much, not that I didn't want to be a high school athletic trainer, but I really felt like I wanted to be an athletic trainer all the time and not have to basically, even then I realized that's two jobs. If you go teach, a full load and then here you
Oh
are after school for
yes.
your second part-time job, and I'm sure you're familiar.
Oh yes,
So.
that's been a discussion point for many, many years as we developed our class where I work. Fortunately, I have fantastic support. I can't complain one bit. I teach just a couple classes, one a day, and then at our school, and everybody's heard this if they listen, we are in charge of all the healthcare. So we do all clinical care for anybody on campus throughout the day, including into the afternoon. So we kind of fluctuate our hours a little bit to not burn out. I'm very fortunate in that, and I've said it many times. We now have three athletic trainers at our campus because of the workload, and that all comes down to great administration and them taking care of us and seeing our value.
Give yourself a little bit of credit there, Eli, because I'm sure that you've demonstrated your own value over the years and made the case for why they should support you.
I
I have
appreciate
no
that.
doubt that's happened. So.
Yeah. Every now and then I speak up. So I've been known to. Just like any of us that believe in this profession and love this profession, we're advocates for not ourselves, but the profession and those that will follow.
Absolutely. And I know I hear from some members that they're tired of being told, oh, advocate for yourself and those kinds of things. But honestly, we do it every day, whether we realize it or not. And
So true. So true.
that's the thing. I mean, if you're out there taking care of whoever your patients are, whether they're in a secondary school or a college or in a clinic or in the workplace somewhere, your presence is advocating for the profession. So.
And at the same time, we're educating people because not, as we both know, not everybody knows what an athletic trainer is. Even if you're in a state that has licensure, rub it in, rub it in, rub it in. But we got our first step, title protection. We'll take it. It's something. We're going in the right direction out here in California. But at the same time, I look at my friends that are PTs. They have to explain, no, I'm not a massage therapist. That's not all I do. We have to educate. That's just healthcare in general.
People think they know what certain jobs are, and they don't necessarily really know what they are. And the reality is very different. Sometimes when you're doing the job, you're the head guy there. I'm sure lots of people think they could do your job, but they have no idea what you do every day. Even your coworkers, your colleagues there probably think they could do what you do, and they have no idea half of the things that you have to deal with on a daily basis.
I think one of my favorite little anecdotes on that, I had to leave school for a few days to take my daughter to college. And when I got back, our assistant director of health services and sports medicine, our other athletic trainer, looked at me. He's like, I told the principal I couldn't wait for you to get back. I was tired of the phone calls and the emails. I'm like, well,
You
thank you. At
go.
least I know I got something going on for me around here.
There you go.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. You've been in the profession for several years now. What is one of your favorite parts of being an athletic trainer?
The one thing that really struck me even early on was that I really enjoyed not only being around sports, but it also let me be involved in healthcare, in medicine. We always talk about our population, the athletic population anyway, the traditional secondary school college population is generally healthy. As our patient populations have expanded, we are dealing with some older people or just adults have other conditions. But in general, we're dealing with mostly healthy people and they're staying active. And I like being on the field. I like being involved with the team. I think the age group, I really gravitated more to college athletics because I think I like that age group better than secondary school. I'm better suited to work with college athletes. I really enjoy being able to talk to people, being able to talk to students. You kind of always know what's going on. You know what music's out there. You know all those things. You can kind of stay on top of things when you're on a college campus, especially. I mean, there's nothing like it. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And I didn't mind the travel usually. You get to go places, you get out of the office, and it's a nice thing. You bond with people differently. You develop different relationships with the staff, with the student athletes. Sometimes you meet parents on road trips and get to know them. So I enjoyed that aspect of it too.
It's all about relationships, no matter whether it's the
Sure.
kids, the coaches, the parents that you get to meet, or the colleagues that as you're going around to the other universities.
100%. That goes, I mean, to me, it goes without saying, but I hear more seasoned athletic trainers, as we say, complain that that's something that we've seen to lost a little bit here. And I think we need to get back to that, to making sure that we're good hosts to visiting athletic trainers and that we actually take advantage of that time to be able to meet with them and get to know them and develop those relationships.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think a good friend of mine, and I'll say his name, Tim Masicki at Loyola High School. We were discussing this one day. He's like, good host. He's like, that's just common sense. You're supposed to take care of your colleague that's coming in from outside. Why should we have to tell somebody to do it? But again, seasoned vet.
Something I don't yeah I don't know how that got lost along the way because it was I mean gosh when I was a student that was part of somebody's job as a student that was like you're going to stand over with the visiting team and anything they need you're going to take care of it and you had food out
Exactly.
for them and you made sure that it's just sort of like someone comes to your house and you don't offer them a chair or a drink. I don't know.
That doesn't happen in my house. That's the first
Yeah,
thing you get
exactly.
offered.
Exactly. So I don't know. I don't want to sound like, the old we're sounding like too old, you know what's, but I hope we can kind of course correct and get back to taking care of each other a little better because I think those relationships are really important. it's not only you're missing being a good host, but it's those relationships are so important.
Completely agree. It increases, and this is a word that we always go back to, it increases your network, and you create a network of people you can trust by simply being a good host.
And there's times I'm sure with even with three ATs, I don't know how much you travel with your teams, but you're sending teams to other places without an AT traveling with them. So you want to know people at the place they're going, so you know who you can trust or you know who you can call. And I know if I send somebody to your school and one of those players gets a concussion, you're going to call me up and let me know that happened and not just let me find out
Heck yeah.
the next afternoon because somebody told me, and then the kid didn't come to school, and that's the first I find out about it, kind of thing.
And
So,
then you got to hunt them down and try and figure out
all
what
of
the
those
heck's
things,
going on. Yep.
you know,
Yep.
you want to, and you know who you can trust. I'm sure in your conference, you know the people you can trust and the people that are not maybe as reliable, or someone's there by themselves. They might be on at a soccer game while your volleyball team's playing a game. So you
Oh,
know the
yes.
situations.
Oh,
I mean,
yes, we all do.
I've done high school enough to know those challenges. Those relationships are super important, and I think that our young professionals that are moving into that setting really have to build those networks and get to know the people. So.
So, what are some of the ways? Let's stick with this. This is a great comment, and hopefully some of our young professionals listening can gain some knowledge. What are some of the ways you think that we can help them or push them or nudge them in that direction of creating those relationships? What could we say, or what could you say that would help them? Or how could they do it?
Your setting, for example, or a college setting, I think, working a game is being a host. And I think as a preceptor, give them those opportunities. Stress how important it is. Let them see you stand there with you interacting with this athletic trainer from the other school that you've known for 10 years. Let them understand that. I think we need to do those things and just model that behavior a little better. And I think that if you're doing medical timeouts, that also is a huge place that you can, you're not just meeting people in the timeout and look here, go see you later. I mean, I think there's more opportunity than ever because of the medical timeout to kind of build some of those relationships, especially when you're in a secondary school setting where sometimes there's not going to be an AT at a given event. So I think this is just more important than ever. But I think the medical timeout makes it even easier. But I do think that it's just modeling behavior and stressing it coming from the preceptors and hoping that people, as they start to know some people, and gosh, for a student, that's networking. If I'm doing a clinical rotation with you and I want to work in that setting and I'm staying in California, I'm going to know you, but I'm going to meet a bunch of other people on the sideline of football games this fall, right? That might hire me or might know somebody that will hire me. So
Amen.
if I can talk to them, and if you talk to them and have a conversation, they can at least remember you. Even if you didn't talk about anything substantial, they're going to remember Eli had that really good student. I don't remember their name, but I'm going to call him up. That's how the world works.
So
So
true. So true.
that's just networking. And I think there's just a hesitancy on the part of a lot of younger people these days to have face-to-face contact. And it's very intimidating and anxiety producing for some people. So the thought that you would have to go over to the other sideline and introduce yourself to someone you don't know and let them know that, hey, the water's here and I've got someone that's going to check on you at halftime and all the things you say in a medical timeout,
Yep.
I that's very intimidating. And I think that is something that we really need to be intentional about. I think preceptors, and I know I've talked to faculty in AT programs that tell me this and tell me that they work on these things with students. So I think that the next step is really preceptors helping with that process because you're going to have to talk to people face to face. We work with people.
It's
We're in healthcare. We're
healthcare.
working with people every single day. So you're going to have to actually talk to them and I was talking to someone recently that mentioned that they asked younger people, how are you communicating with your coaches, with your coaching staff? And it's like, oh, I text them. So I text them, let them know who's good for practice, who's not. And you're just missing so much. And there's so much potential for a bad outcome, unintentionally bad outcome at some point by communicating that way. And you're just missing so much by not developing good relationships with the coaching colleagues that you have.
Couldn't agree more. You went back a couple times to Dr. Jim Kyle's creation, the medical timeout. We had him on the show a few months back. Fantastic. Love the medical timeout. I didn't know I was doing a medical timeout for so long until he coined the phrase and started pushing it out in West Virginia. And as it grew and became bigger and part of the Corey Stringer Institute's real big push. As preceptors for both Cal State Northridge and University of Laverne, the athletic trainers here, we bring our students with us. Come on. And we have our little form. And this is the opportunity to build your network, just like you said. But one thing I like to tell them is, hey, why don't you get a little business card? What are they? A couple, 50, 60 bucks on online?
Oh, not even, not even.
You can get 500 for that. And put your name on it, your cell phone number, your email, where, your aspirations, a professional quote, whatever, and hand it to them. And then you have them for your district meeting, your state meeting, shake hands, kiss babies, hand out the cards, get to know people. Like you said, those are the people that are going to hire you or refer you to that
Right.
future position.
Yeah.
Great stuff there. Now we are on the left coast. You're all the way over on the right coast. What are some of the topics that are big in your area right now? We're miles apart, but the athletic training field is very similar. What do you got going on out
Yeah.
there?
I will tell you one of the biggest topics I think in my district is, and it's we're not the only one, but there's this perceived shortage of athletic trainers in secondary schools. What we really have is an actual shortage of people who want to go into that setting. And a lot of times that has to do with pay, frankly. I'm in a situation where I'm in Connecticut and for many years had some clinics that had a great deal of the business there and had contracts and traditionally have been somewhat low paying. And there's a lot of turnover, and I've watched people work for 2 years and then not make enough money, sort of get burned out, get their brand new professionals being thrown into the fire to high school and getting eaten alive, basically, and they end up leaving the profession. I have connections with a bunch of them on LinkedIn, and they're doing other things now. You know, maybe they're in peripheral area, or maybe they're doing something completely different. Some of them have gone into sales and things like that, and some of them are reps for Stryker or somewhere, some other medical device company, and some of them are selling insurance or something completely different. I think that that's not helped anything. So we've got a had a tradition there in my state of that happening, and it's happened in a few other states in my district. And now we're in a situation post-COVID that a lot of people lost their jobs right away. A lot of high school athletic trainers in our area, I don't know about you all, but in
Oh,
our
yes.
area, yeah, lost their jobs, you know, by the end of March 2020. And I think we lost some people in the profession there, and we had some people lose their job. They went to a different setting. They're still in the profession, but they're not going back to where they came from. So we have lots of job openings in the state and in other states in my district for secondary school athletic trainers, and they don't get filled because as a new graduate, if you can come out and get offered 60, 70,000 to work at Amazon and have a normal 8-hour-a-day job with no weekends, and
8-hour-a-day job. What the hell is that?
yeah, exactly. So why, you know, why wouldn't you do that? And that's more important to people these days. And really, when the money is there's that big a difference in the money, that's the big deal. I mean, you can want to do athletic training, and we have the same issue with college athletics. Those jobs, you used to get 100 plus applicants for even Division One jobs. I can remember applying for Division One jobs and there'd be 200 applicants.
Yep.
And now I talk to people in Division One and they're lucky to get 20. 20's a lot for many of them. You know, I'm sure the Power Five and the SEC and the Big Ten probably don't have problems with people applying, but everybody else does.
Now, here's a
So
question. Oh, sorry.
yeah, go ahead. Go
My
ahead.
bad. No, you're
No,
on
I
a
don't even
roll.
know what
Keep
I was.
going. Keep
I don't know what I
going.
was going to say. So.
Well, here's a question for you. And we've both been in the profession a while. How do you think part of it is not just people don't want to go that direction, but since the jump to the Masters of Science in athletic training, and we've lost so many schools that were teaching athletic training in the bachelor setting, do you think not having as many schools turning out athletic trainers is that part of the issue as well?
We've looked at that within the NATA, and the data doesn't support that notion. That's what a lot of people think. But we actually, according to the BOC, we've actually got, we're turning out the same number of certified ATs as we did previously. The difference now is we had so many of those bachelor's programs, people either didn't take the exam or they failed the exam and never retook it.
And
They
gave up.
didn't, a lot of them did not go into the profession.
I get
So
that.
even though there were more students, we really had the same amount of number of people going into the profession as we did before, you know,
That's good
more or less.
insight. That's great insight because that's always been a little bit of a question, especially us old guys and gals that weren't really sure. So that's good to hear. I've never heard the actual data said that way.
And I think we have people now that are entering master's programs. They know what they want to do. They're going to be an athletic trainer. It's not a stepping stone. You know, many bachelor's programs, it's a stepping stone. I'm going to get my bachelor's in athletic training, go to PT school, go to PA school. For the most part, eliminated that stepping stone piece. Now, someone certainly could still get a master's in athletic training and say, I'm going to go get a DPT or go be a PA, but they're less likely to do that.
More of a chance of those people going an MSAT sticking with the profession. That makes total
Sure,
sense. Total
sure.
sense. Yeah.
But you're getting a little bit older population in some cases. You still have people that are going straight through and either coming out of a 4-year bachelor's program and going into a master's, or they're doing a 3+2 within their institution. So they're
Oh.
still that traditional age.
So three
But,
plus two, we've got some people that don't know what a 3+2 is. Could you explain
okay.
that real quick?
And I'm not the expert on this because they're different. Different programs do it different ways,
Of
but
course.
the 3+2, they start off, they're at the same institution. They basically are getting their bachelor's degree in 3 years and then transitioned into the master's program.
So, in
So,
theory, a good colleague of mine out here at Azusa Pacific University, I believe that's what he did his doctoral thesis on, if I remember. And if I'm wrong, Dr. Muir, I apologize. And he was able to prove by doing a 3+2, the financial savings for that individual going into the work field was tremendous. Because on that 6 year, even though maybe he's paying a little more or she's paying a little more, whomever, to go to that master's program, they're out making money. They're not at a public school where they're stuck for 6 years just trying to get through everything and then jumping to a master's. So a 3+2 is kind of
well,
awesome.
that's 5 years versus 6 years
Yep.
of school. I think wherever you're at, you're saving that year's worth of tuition and everything else that goes with it. I think that's part of it. My point to circle back was you have people in that 3+2, or you have people that have maybe graduated, they come back a few years later, and they've decided they wanted to go into AT. So maybe they're a few years older than your typical college age student, your traditional student that goes in right after high school. Some of those people have families, some of those people have other obligations. So they have a little bit different viewpoint on what they're willing to do or able to do from the standpoint of, you know, it was easy for to come out at 22 and say, I'm gonna just work and I love what I'm doing and I'm gonna work and I don't even care what's
Of
vacation, I'll
course.
stay late, I'll stay
Woohoo!
extra. Yeah, I'll do anything because you love it and all those things. That's not the world we're in anymore. And even it there's still people that want to do that, but at the same time, everybody wants and needs to be valued, paid what they're worth, and you need to have time off and not sit around. If you take a bunch of 50, 60, 70-year-old athletic trainers, all they're going to talk about is how many weddings they missed, how many funerals they missed, how they didn't get to spend as much time as they wanted to with some family member who, you know, was in their last days. They're going to have the, no, those, we can't have those conversations. We
No,
can't
not at
be,
all.
we can't be in that world anymore. And everybody that talks about that knows it. I think, you know, give all credit and power to the people that are coming out now and saying we're not going to stand for that from day one.
The word no is powerful when
Well,
used
yeah.
properly. Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
It's no is a complete sentence.
Oh, I love that. I love
It's a
that.
complete sentence, and we have to remember that. We're not
I
just going to
think
lose our job because we say no to something.
one of my favorite anecdotes, again, off of what you're discussing here. I had a colleague that actually wore it as a badge of pride that he had never been to his daughter's birthday because it aligned with the NATA National Convention. And I sat there going, buddy, you're proud of that? He's like, well, I got to be at the NATA. I said, so will the NATA be at your funeral? And he got really quiet when I said that. I'm like, don't get me wrong, I love my profession, but I'll take my kid over a convention any day.
Maybe bring them with you.
Hey, there's a thought. There's some fun places to
They go
go.
to some fun places and you can find something to do almost anywhere.
Loved it when they were out here in Anaheim, man. Disneyland, woohoo, or Disney World or
We
New
got Disney World
Orleans.
this year if you want it, so.
Yeah. Never understood the Missouri one, though. Kansas City, I mean, good barbecue and all, but
Right in the middle of the country.
here you
Right
go. That's
smack dab in the middle of the country.
excellent point. I never thought about the geographics of it. That is a quick and easy flight for everybody.
Do you want to fly to Kansas City or do you want to fly to Boston, New York,
Well, I
Baltimore,
wouldn't mind.
Orlando,
I wouldn't
you
mind all
know?
those places, let me tell you, but I want that barbecue in Kansas City.
Well,
I'll tell you
yeah,
that
I
right
know.
now.
Well, I know. We've outgrown them, I think. Even now, we've outgrown them. But yeah, you're right. I liked Kansas City. I like St. Louis, but center of the country is an easier flight for everybody. So I think you get more people from both sides of the country.
That's a great point. Thank you for sharing that. So we talked a little bit. It seems like the left coast, the right coast have some similar issues going on in the
Sure.
profession. Just all those open positions looking for athletic trainers right now. I know over here in California, our legislative priorities right now, we had a really good year. We talked about it earlier. What are some of the legislative things on the East Coast in your district, in your region, even in your state? That are going on.
Sure. Well, we certainly within our district, we have some states that are in the process of attempting to update their practice acts. To kind of modernize their practice acts. I know one of our states hasn't, the practice act hasn't been touched since it was enacted in the 80s. So it's clearly in need of updating, and it clearly needs to be, at this point in time, is limiting people from working with certain populations because of the way it's worded. And we have to remember that in the early days, a lot of states had to sell their souls to get licensure and give up a lot. So we have states looking to modernize practice acts. We have states working on trying to get more athletic trainers into the secondary schools in various ways. In my state, in Connecticut, last year we ran a bill that enacted a task force to study the problem of the lack of athletic trainers in secondary schools in the state. We have,
Ooh, I like
and
that.
it's, yeah, and it's tied in. It's, that bill was passed, the task force was constructed, and they've been studying that. They've got a report coming out. But really, they're looking at things like, and it's not just in New England, it's around the country. There are states that are looking at things like being able to create student loan forgiveness if you're working in certain settings, particularly if you're in urban or rural settings, but really any kind of public school-based setting. They're looking at things like that. forgiveness of student loans,
That would be
looking,
fantastic.
yes, they're looking at ways to entice people into that setting. They're looking at potentially being able to have some funding to help the programs, educational programs at the public schools within the state. In Connecticut, we've got programs in three state university systems that impacts the state and those programs. And if we're sitting there telling people, yeah, our graduates are leaving the state because they have,
That's
these are
not
the
what you want.
opportunities that they have. Yeah, these are the opportunities that they have. They don't get paid well in the secondary schools. Our state association in Connecticut right now, also the CATA, just like you and just like I think Colorado. But
Just like us, right?
you know, the state association is really working hard to educate the school administrations. I just spoke to the president the other day. I do a monthly, or not a monthly, a quarterly call with the state presidents in my association or in my district. And they're really being successful, and word's starting to kind of get around that there are people within the CATA that can help you. So she's starting to get phone calls from athletic directors and other people in school administration saying, hey, we need to hire somebody. And I spoke to this person who told me I should call you. And they're hiring. We've just had a couple schools that are hiring or about to post jobs in the $80,000 a year range. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
So, you know, we had a conversation. I said, hey, is that on a teacher scale or how's that working? And she said, you know, we're actually, depending on the school system, of course, finding out that sometimes being on the teacher pay scale isn't actually what's the best thing. In some schools, they're putting them on the type of a contract that maybe the maintenance worker might be on because those people are get called in. If there's a snowstorm, they get called in to shovel, or they have to be there on weekends, or they have to be there at nights for events, and it's outside of their normal work hours. And there is a mechanism for them to be compensated for that in some fashion. A lot of times, some schools give them a stipend at the end of the year for that extra time. And you've got athletic trainers that are there a lot of times over Christmas break, spring break. Sometimes there's some summer work. They're there on the weekends. Almost every high school is
Oh,
somewhere on a
yes.
week on at least one weekend day. So there are those times outside of what teachers aren't there those times,
Not at all.
right?
They
That's
usually get to leave at
outside.
3, too. We don't.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, they've been creative with that and they've looked at those types of things, and I think it's really helped. It's helped with the educate the school systems. It's also helping athletic trainers understand the things that they need to think about. Like you and I have worked in that setting for a while, and we know where all the minefields are, and we know most of the time what's going to come up. Somebody that just graduated and they did a couple of rotations, even with somebody like you, they have no idea what they don't know. So they sign contracts that lock them into things, and then it maybe they're getting paid a little better, but they're working forever,
Working
and
like a dog, yep.
they've signed things that have locked them in and don't give them any help and don't necessarily give them steps for pay increases or anything else. So they've kind of gotten creative, and they're doing a really good job of educating people, advocating for the profession, and starting slowly, I think, to turn the tide there in some places.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. That's exciting. That's exciting. I love the fact that there is a task force looking at how to improve the secondary schools, and it's state mandated because there are so many things that happen at the high school setting that people don't know about. And if they could get the appropriate health care, oh my God, how much better off and safer and healthier would these young student athletes be? And at the same time, mitigating risk for the school district, or whoever's in charge.
I think the risk mitigation piece, I think, is where maybe as a profession, some of us have been slower to jump on that train than we should have. I've been pushing this for a while. That is what you have to talk about. We can talk about all the things that we do, and there's no other access to healthcare for some of these students in high school, and all the things that we do. And the bottom line is, you know, the pay grades that are going to determine things like salary and determine if you're going to get the funding to add positions and things like that. They care about things like risk reduction. They care about not getting sued, and they care about no somebody not dying on their campus. You know, they care very much about those things, and risk reduction is what we do.
That's our job.
So, and gosh, I mean, I know you said you're in a situation where you're providing care for the whole school to begin with, but in a lot of high schools, the nurse goes home at 3 o'clock or whatever time school's out. Nurse goes home. Athletic trainers are there for sports, hopefully, but there's a bunch of other kids running around doing things that aren't on sports teams. They might be music, they might be theater, they might be, you know, staying after school for whatever other activity they're doing. And yeah, maybe there's a teacher or a staff member that's there that's part of the club advisor or something, but there's nobody there to take care of them.
No,
And
and
that's a
something
massive gap in
always
care
happened.
for the school system. And
Yep,
you
that.
and nobody worries about it because nothing ever happened until something happens,
Oh,
as we all
yes.
know. And then things change. Well, you don't want that ever, you know, because a lot of those things are preventable. You don't want not to have anticipated that one of those theater kids could need an EpiPen
Be
and dies
proactive, not
because of something
reactive.
so stupid as not anticipating that, right?
Oh God, yes.
Yeah.
God, yes. Preaching to the choir. I love it. I love
Oh,
it.
I know I am. I know I
Yep.
am. But
Yep.
gosh, it's risk reduction, and I think you can sell that to you can start selling that to the school systems,
I
you
think
know.
that might be the direction when California does get our licensure. God help us, crossing fingers someday. I think that's where it happens, because risk management in California, that's huge. If you can reduce it, you can get the risk managers on your side, you're set.
Really, I think I've talked to people in, especially in college settings, that that's the way they've gone, and that is, you know, clearly the way they've had the most success at getting what they need and improving their programs and their staffing and their salaries and everything else. And it's certainly no different for a school system, and the community can't bear those costs of a lawsuit,
Oh,
you
God,
know.
no. God, no. Ain't that the truth?
Can I ask you something? And we might edit this whole part out, but
Go right ahead.
this came up the other day.
Please
So
ask.
you have your title protection now. I think I remember that it sort of grandfathered some people in.
Yes, that is correct. A little bit, well, ish, with a big asterisk.
It grandfathered people, and I wonder if you guys know how many people there are in the state like that. I know that you know anecdotally. This came up in someone I was really having a conversation with recently, and I didn't know the answer.
So
If you knew, if you, I didn't even know if you all knew the answer to how many people are out there saying they're athletic trainers that really aren't.
I was just on a conversation with our president, Kai Kukler, and we were discussing this. They're in the process of really trying to narrow down how many people are quote unquote athletic trainers that aren't certified or licensed through the BOC, let alone how many aren't members of our CATA organization in California. The bill that passed grandfathers a little bit per se. It's a big asterisk right now. They are determining exactly how many years those individuals have left. At the moment, it says whatever their contract states. So when their contract, and this is my understanding, so if they have a bargain contract, say with a school district, and they are designated as the athletic trainer, we can't pull them out of their job as an athletic trainer at this time. However, when their new contract comes up 2, 3, 4 years from now, from that point forward, unless they are BOC certified, they cannot be called an athletic trainer
Okay.
from that point forward. So it'll take
that's
a
a
couple
that's a
years to.
short-term grandfather though. That's kind of good.
It's not a permanent grandfather.
Yeah.
My big concern, and I'll be honest, is the original bill said you had to go through a CATA approved program. And I went, whoa. I'm an old guy. I went through a non-approved CATA program, and they had tweaked it to whoever was the organization at the time. Said, but I went to the internship program. And so they had adjusted prior to that, as long as they went through an accredited or whatever program and sat for their boards and are certified.
You already hold the credential. You already hold the
Correct.
certification, and you're maintaining your certification.
That was it. So that's
That's
my
the other
understanding
thing.
in
Yeah.
the
Okay.
grandfathering that I am aware of. But again, I was not on that committee.
But do you all have a sense of how many people are out there like that are in that situation?
At the
Not
moment, my
really.
understanding is no. I know they're
Right.
working on compiling that list as possible over the last few years. I know I've contributed a few names to that list over the years.
That's what
But
I
you know
figured
how,
was happening. I get it. Yeah.
the high schools fluctuate with people in, people out, that whole nine yards.
Right. But if you've got people on a year-to-year contract right now, is your title protection enacted? It's
That's a
gone
great
into effect?
question. I don't believe so, not yet.
Okay.
I believe that's something we're supposed to be hearing about in 1, 2, wait, where are we there? 2 weeks.
Okay.
Actually, less than 2 weeks. So that's one of the questions that's going to be asked at our CATA state conference in a week
There
and
you
a
go.
half.
There you
Actually,
go.
holy crud. No, I'm wrong. A week. It's amazing how quickly the month goes. Going back to those previous students, the younger generation has really gotten better than we were back in the day at saying no. Work-life balance. If you could give them recommendations and some suggestions on tricks that worked for you, maybe, what are some of the recommendations you would give?
Until much later, until much late, until I was around long enough to start to figure things out. I think that one of the places, and it all depends on where you work and what your situation is as far as administrative support, including from your supervisor and what the climate is there. But I can tell you that one thing I started to figure out pretty quickly. I took a job through a local clinic, sports medicine clinic, and they had a contract with the high school. I was contracted for a certain number of hours each week, actually a certain number of hours per week, and it varied by sports season. So in the fall, in the spring, it was
Of
I don't
course.
even remember. It was, I think, 25 to 28, and then in the winter it was like 30, because we had basketball, had ice hockey, had wrestling. We had enough sports that when at
Oh,
night,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
especially with hockey, you're always playing games at night so it just added to that. It became obvious they made us fill out for work. We had to fill out like a time we had to fill out by hand a time sheet every week, and it was just like, oh, just fudge your hours. And it was just like, you should just be there, even if you work more, you just say you work
I
your 40
remember that.
hours.
Yeah.
And you'll get I figured out pretty quickly, well, that's not going to work. And the other thing was, if I'm contracted for 20 hours a week, I shouldn't be there more than 20 hours. Now, I'm not saying I'm going to walk off the field on Friday night in the middle of the game because I'm over my hours. What I started to do was figure out what my schedule would be. And if that meant I came into school an hour later or half an hour later on a certain day, or you have to build your schedule around that. And I always hear athletic trainers, I've heard this for years, who's going to take the kids? What's going to happen to the kids? No one will be there to take care of them. That's not your fault or your problem. You can't have that attitude. And that's what we've done. We've shot ourselves in the foot for so many years by being
Yes.
so altruistic and we're going to save the world. And it's not my fault if the school wants to pay me to be here 20 hours a week. That's how much they're paying my employer for me to be here. And if you need me to be here more, then you need to restructure your contract. And I worked with people, and I would preach this and preach this until they finally started to kind of figure it out. And we all started to do that, because if the school needs more, they should pay for it. If you give them something for free and you give them extra on top of that, not for free, but for not a lot, and then you give them extra on top of that, why would they ever pay you more money? It's
Why
like we
would
used to
they?
volunteer to do camps and things like that. Are you kidding?
Sending a GA to do a certified job at a high school at a reduced rate.
I was a certified GA, fortunately. So
Yeah.
but I know that's
At a reduced rate. Yeah, that's the catch. If they can get
yeah.
away with something cheaper,
Well,
they will.
yeah. And we've allowed it, and it's still happening because colleges are still trying to hire interns at less than market value.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sorry, I an intern in the athletic world is an entry level job for somebody who has no other qualifications, where you're talking about somebody who's trained and has a national credential and a state license. to provide health care, that's not the same. So we can't, that's not the same as I just played 4 years of college soccer and now I'm going to be the intern for a soccer team in the athletic department. That's not the same thing.
Not one bit.
So we can't, we've done that to ourselves. We've started getting away from it. And I empathize with my colleagues in the college setting now who are in a position where they're trying to do better and they're trying to increase salaries, they're trying to get more positions. And the only choice they have is to offer an intern position because no one will give them another option. And then they get hammered because the pay isn't what it should be. And because they're offering an intern position, they're in a no-win situation, even though they're trying to do better. College athletics has kind of done this to themselves as well because, and we allowed ourselves to be taken advantage of, and they were happy to do it.
Yep.
And I think we're at a place there where we've got to get out of being employees of the athletic department. I don't care where you're at. I think
Amen.
we've got to
Amen.
have, yeah, we have to have a medical model. And it always amazes me that it seems like, I mean, I can remember having jobs where I was literally on call 24/7,
Oh, yeah.
365.
Oh,
And
yeah.
like, we're the only people in healthcare that do that. If you go to the hospital and you're having a heart attack, at some point, the person that's been your doctor is going to go home. Even though you need to stay there, there's another doctor that's going to come in and take care of you. Same with the
Totally true.
nurse, same with the people in the cath lab. All the people are going to go home.
We let the
You
guilt
know,
get to us.
they're going to their kid's birthday party and their kid's wedding, their parents' 50th anniversary. You know, they're going to those events. But athletic trainers, somehow we're the ones that we can't go anywhere. That's our dysfunctional family piece, I think, for a long time. And now we're at a place where we all recognize it. And the people coming up are like, you guys are crazy, and we're not going to do this anymore. You know?
Yep,
And,
totally. I do know all too well,
you know, Grandpa,
extremely
why are
well.
you driving that old car?
Oh, well, I tell you what, this has been so much fun, Vicky. I really truly enjoyed this, but I felt like we barely talked about anything. There were so many more things I feel like we could have discussed. So I'm going to say right now, I want you to come back. Would love to have you on another show to just keep talking about the different aspects. This has been so fun.
Had a great time. I'm happy to talk to you anytime.
That would be great. So we'll have to talk with our producer Gabriel and get him back on with you, and we'll figure out another day to hit some more topics because this was just like
Great.
talking to an old friend. This was fantastic and easy. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I feel the same
So
way.
hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you for being on this episode and have a fantastic weekend.
Okay, you too.
Have a
Thanks a
great
lot.
one.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Haller. It is produced by Gabriel Haller. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.